This is Julian Valdivia with the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program. I'm at Roberto Clemente Park at the Lee County Black History Society, and this is my second interview with
LaVon Sims
and Nancy Kelly Sims in Fort Myers, Florida.
Yes, Fort Myers, Florida. this is a continuation of the last interview we did, which I think was 2 weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so where we left off was, I remember we were talking about the walkouts at North Fort Myers, and also how North Fort Myers changed over time, or at least North Fort Myers High, I should say, with you were talking about how the you helped design the architecture for the new building and everything. So I want to start by asking Nancy then about what she was doing at this time, because I saw in the yearbook you were teaching at Cape Earl High.
Okay.
So I get a sense of like time frame, when LaVon started teaching at North Fort Myers High, what were you doing at the time, Nancy?
Oh, okay. Well, and I guess we'll back up, Julian. LaVon actually started teaching 68, 69 at Dunbar High School.
Yep.
And then the following year, 69, 70, he is when he went to North High. At that time, I was working. Okay, because when he first started working at Dunbar, I was substituting. I actually did not have my four-year degree. I did the 2 years at Edison in a secretarial science program, so that I started off, as aforestated, substituting, and then in 1969, I went to work at the school board's main office as secretary in the secondary education department. Wait a minute. I used to be able to do all my years. Now I can't get my years straight. I was down there 3 years, I think.
You got the yearbook
okay.
out. Oh, there it is. It's right there.
Yeah. School District 68, okay. To 71, because that's when I went to Colusa.
Okay.
In 1971, when Colusa Elementary opened, I went there. As a secretary.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until 1979 that when Cape Coral High School opened, I went in on the instructional side, but I was never full-time in the classroom. I worked in the guidance department doing occupational and career counseling.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you have more?
No, I was getting ready to try to remember the years, how long I stayed there, because I was there for like 25 years. But anyway.
I was going to ask, what got you into education first off? Because I know you started substituting, but why did you decide to start substituting?
Parents.
No, well, yeah, you say parents. Oh, number one, it was a job. Mm-hmm. After... we got married, needed money. I was expecting, it was the opportunity there as far as the job opportunity. But like you said, both my mother and my stepfather were educators.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really wanted to teach, but I ended up in education anyway.
Okay. And is that why you like ended up doing more like administrative things, like with instructional? Well, what was like the guidance at
right.
Cape Coral High,
uh-huh.
and things like that.
Right.
And so I didn't hear right. What was the year you started at Cape Coral High then? Because I know you went from Colusa to Cape High.
Right. 79. I'm thinking 78, 79 school term.
Oh, okay. 78, 79. And at this time, were you already involved with, like, the NAACP and stuff like that? Because I know you're the treasurer right now.
Right, currently I'm the treasurer. I really can't tell you when I originally started working with the NAACP. It was back during Veronica Shoemaker's term.
Okay. Her first term? All right, she was just in the city council.
Hey, Brian, yeah, but, no, but she's she was a former president of the local NAACP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I want to say, it had to be 70s, 80s, somewhere in there.
I was going to say, she take over after Isidore Edwards? Or was there someone in between?
I can't tell you that either. I'd have to go back and look at the records in the office.
Okay.
I don't think so. It was somewhere after that, because after Isidore Edwards, that's when Davies was there, right?
Yeah, I think Marvin Davies. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
At that particular time, there was basically so much turmoil going on.
Right, because Isidore would have been during the 60s.
Well, you say 60s, had to be. Yeah. Probably
60. Yeah, he left like 71, 72 from
like
what I read. But you guys weren't, were you involved? You weren't involved then, because you said you got involved with Veronica Shoemaker.
I wasn't, but you said you, under Isidore.
Under Isidore Edwards, I was young. I was like, I don't know, I was in high school, I believe. Probably in high school. And at this time, we were having the demonstrations, I guess you might say. It wasn't really demonstrations, but organizing, put it that way. He was organizing. And I can remember getting ready to go downtown for a demonstration, but it didn't materialize.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Was that the one? I heard that there was a demonstration that was called off because, like, Snag Thompson had, like, pulled Isidore aside or something like that.
Well, that's what I heard, but I can tell you what I saw.
Okay.
We, as kids, were sitting on the steps of the Friendship Baptist Church, and a load of white guys came along and had guns hanging out of the windows. And that's when Reverend Edwards, whose office was upstairs, came out and said, "We're not going to go downtown today."
Okay.
So after that, I don't think anything really happened when it comes to, you know, what happened behind the scenes. I don't know. We were kids. But we were young, I guess. So who knows? All I know, the demonstration was called off.
Okay.
So, like I said, I tell you what I saw.
What
was going on, you know, in the back there.
Right. And I don't really remember my parents saying anything about participating in demonstrations or the NAACP directly.
Mm-hmm.
But as an adult, I had a conversation with a former teacher who said to me that they were told, meaning black teachers, that they could not join or participate with the NAACP, or they'd be in jeopardy of losing their jobs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, at that time, you had a superintendent and you had an assistant superintendent.
Yeah.
That was pretty much the administration of the school board.
Mm-hmm.
You had school board members, but then you had you don't have all that middle people in there. Like, because I think the only time I remember there's any difference was Dr. Cave, who's director of secondary education, mm-hmm. and somebody else, elementary education. That's when they began to venture out and have these, you know. But before that, I'm thinking, trying to think who was the superintendent at that time when I came here.
white hair. gray hair.
Ray Pardoff?
No, before Ray Pardoff.
Williams?
Yeah, Ray Williams.
Ray Williams.
No. So was he still? I can't remember.
Yeah, he could have been the superintendent at the time, but he was not. It was Mike Primus who was the face that you would see.
Right.
Mike Primus was like the assistant superintendent. He was the one who would come out to schools or something like that. And, you know, he was the one that if there was a problem, you.
He did the dirty work.
Yeah, he did. So, but at that particular time, you know, this was, you know, I'm going to say my first year teaching. Mm-hmm. So I'm on an annual contract. There's not a whole lot that I'm going to say. It's not a whole lot I'm going to do simply because if you're on a contract, the end of the year, your contract's over anyway. So you have to come back and sign.
Yeah.
At the end of 3 years, then you were eligible to go on, quote unquote, continuing contract.
Mm.
Oh, they, old people said they was giving you 10 years. So young teachers were not, they were not going to do anything. They were not going to rock the boat.
Yeah.
So I was under that, you know, that kind of thing where, plus the fact, like she said, she was pregnant and, you know, we were young. Mm. Couldn't find an apartment. We were living with my parents. So we were not, you know, we weren't shaking anything. However, in college, I was a member of the NAACP youth group.
Yep.
But that was in college. This is a whole different. You're talking about 400 miles away up in Tallahassee. So now things are, you know, attitudes are different when you're a student as opposed to now you're out in the real world. And you can't, you know, you can't be acting crazy. You got to, man, it's time to buckle in and buckle up.
Mm.
So.
Okay.
Left all that in Tallahassee.
So Nancy, mm-hmm. when you joined on then under Veronica Shoemaker, mm-hmm. do both of you remember what like the major issues were at the time after like post well integration?
Yeah, I think the problems basically were in schools. Schools were the problems, you know. Kids.
Well, under Veronica, by that time, we had already integrated.
Yeah, it
was so when you say they were the problem, we
was what was going on in the schools.
Okay, all right, yeah, I'll go along with that.
Yeah,
the I'm thinking part of the big issue, especially around here, and I don't really remember the NAACP addressing it, but employment, housing, that sort of thing, and even being able to go into the restaurants downtown.
Mm.
But you know, you're talking about after schools integrated, right?
Right.
Okay. I think the big thing then was Ms. Shoemaker trying to get herself elected
right.
Because at that particular time, we had voting at large.
Okay.
And she had run, you know, she run every year, every other year, whatever. And she was never elected, although she would always carry, you know,
this area.
Yeah. Mm. Black neighborhoods. So that's kind of, I guess that was the thing out there that NAACP had to be fighting at that particular time. Mm-hmm. That was had to be a major issue.
How did voting at large work? I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Okay. Voting at large. We still have some of that now here at the school board. But voting at large is, okay, you decide to run.
Okay.
Although you said, well, we had at that time, I think it was 4 wards.
Yeah.
Wards or districts, you know, in the
banana. The city is divided up.
Yeah.
And 4 wards, okay. And I think it was Ward 2. Don't quote me on that. Ward 2 or Ward 3. I'm not exactly sure. But that particular ward encompassed
the black neighborhood.
So you had Sam Compton, mm-hmm. who for a long time represented, you know, World War III, because you didn't ever see him, you know, you didn't ever, right now if Sam Compton walked through that door, we wouldn't know who Sam Compton is. However, although Sam Compton ran for office, he basically, you know, he just represented an area. Mm. So Miss Shoemaker ran against him. She would carry the area that you're supposed to be representing, but she wouldn't win because all the other areas would vote for him.
Oh, okay.
So when we say at large, I mean anybody can vote for a particular.
Well, everybody, yeah.
Any registered voter in the city could vote.
Oh, okay.
So what would happen is, it's more, you're not winning your award, but you're still sitting there representing these people.
Okay.
So Veronica Shoemaker would win, and he would win the other three awards.
Yeah.
And he would win the seat.
Okay.
So that's pretty much at large. And at large, everybody votes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the end, the city did go to
single member district,
so that you would represent your ward. I mean, just the people in your ward would vote for you.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, so.
However, Mrs. Shoemaker, it just so happens, after running so many times,
that's what
she won while the system was still at large.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was remarkable, you know, for her to have done that. But that's the same way it is with the Lee County government, and why it's so hard for a black person to win a seat, because here again, we're divided up into five districts, and you have a majority black area, you know, with the district. And even though that person, say, Mrs. Melvin Morgan, who back in the 80s, was appointed to the Lee County Commission by then Governor Bob Graham, I think it was, to fulfill, I don't even know whose term it was, but yeah, she filled, completed somebody's term. And then when she had to run on her own, once again, she won this area that she basically represented, but countywide, she lost.
Mm.
And so, what made the thing so unreal was the fact that a guy came in. He didn't even live here. He stayed in long enough to qualify, you know, meet the criteria for running for office, which I think was 6 months or something like that.
Oh, wow.
He won. And that's what really has got people, I guess, right now. The sitting commissioners don't want single member districts simply because they know that, hey, look, this is not going to work for me. And I'm tell you something else. In this last census, when reapportionment came around, the black neighborhood was split. Because they saw what was happening. I mean, now you're talking about single member districts, and you might get that.
Yeah.
In other words, if you go to the courts and the courts say, okay, this is gerrymandering and it's blatantly unfair, so then you go to single member districts. So what has happened is the black neighborhood now is split. So you basically, even if you get single member districts, you still won't have a majority.
Wow.
It's
hey, trials and tribulations. What black folk have gone through.
But you know, you just kind of you look at it, and this area is in an area with Norfolk Myers, which means that Norfolk Myers, half the black neighborhood is in the same district as Norfolk Myers, which means that there's a there's a natural barrier there, which is that river.
Yeah, the Coosahatchee.
Okay. Right, there's that river there, and you're in an area with no Fomers, so which means that you got nothing in common with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's that half, and the other half is in with what Lehi, I think. Mm-hmm. So Lehi and a part of the Dunbar area, quote unquote, is in that. So you have Brian Harmon, who represents one half. And then Frank Mann represents the other half, the black neighborhoods, which is split right in the middle because they voted for reapportionment came. Mm. This is what happened. Now, the NAACP fought that, but they didn't win, you know, so.
In the courts down here, they didn't win that?
How did it go to court or what happened?
I don't think the NAACP has taken the county to court on
the reapportionment for
county commission. Mm-hmm. We did take the school board to court, and because their districts basically followed the county commission's districts originally, and it was the same deal as far as, you know, even though you had individual districts, you ran at large, so that has been changed. They now have single member, well, they used to just have five straight seats. Now they have seven seats, five of which are single member districts and two are at large.
Which really neutralizes the thing again.
Yeah.
It's called a hybrid system.
But why?
because it's still gerrymandering.
Yeah.
Any way you look at it, it's gerrymandering. And I don't know why anyone, I mean, this was to satisfy the court case, I think. Either it was dropped, I don't know. There's you give me this and I give you that. It was some kind of difference. I'm not even sure. My thing is, I get so crazy about what has happened when it comes to politics in Lee County and Southwest Florida till after a while I just pick up a good book and forget about the whole thing.
Okay, let me see. Let me go back.
Yeah, get on
we
that.
I know this
could, right, this could be,
you get so many stories.
You're learning a lot of our little secrets. Yeah, talk to her.
Okay, because we were talking about my job.
Yeah, in the cave.
Right. And I mentioned that I had been at Cape for 25 years, but I wanted to back up when we're talking about the NAACP and the issues. When we talk about the housing, like Levon said, when we first got married in here, we were trying to find an apartment in Lee. At that time, the majority of blacks stayed on the east side of the railroad track.
Yeah.
Okay. I was working, like I said, downtown at school board, and I don't think my voice wasn't as
your telephone voice.
Yeah. My telephone voice was a lot different from my natural talking voice, because that's basically what I was doing, you know, answering the phones down there for secondary ed. But anyway, I had called and made an appointment to see an apartment that was on the other side of the railroad track.
Okay.
Okay.
It was in the gray area.
Well, okay, it was a gray area now, because it was really close to the railroad track. But it was basically what was considered a white neighborhood. Everything was all set, and LaVon and I showed up at the apartment that day.
No, at the realty company.
At the realty?
We went to the realty company. We never went to the apartments.
Remembering things differently than I
do. No, because I can tell you exactly what happened.
Where was really the company?
Right there as you're coming off the bridge from the North of Myers exit, and you go around the little curve over to the left, there was this building. I don't know whether there's anybody in that building right now, but I can remember walking in that door and listening, all of a sudden all those typewriters stopped. I can tell you that. When we were standing there and they just like what are these people doing up in here? And then, you know, at that time they had typewriters, and it got silent. Then all of a sudden, this lady came from the back, mm-hmm. But she didn't say anything to us except for the apartment has been rented. That was it. Yeah, we had gone by the apartment, but matter of fact, we had taken by the apartment.
Right, sure, where it was. Yeah.
But we didn't go to, they didn't meet, she didn't meet us at the apartment. We went to the realty company.
Okay.
And it was, right there. I remember that.
Yeah, okay.
That's like the Lafayette, Louisiana incident. So those kind of things gotta stick with you. So you gotta throw them out of your mind.
Okay.
You guys ended up finding an apartment though, or
no? We ended up living with my parents.
Oh.
And just happened, there's an apartment across the street from my parents' house.
Okay.
And
We eventually got that.
Matter of fact, the guy who Clarence, he had dad, didn't want to rent us that thing. It was like, you know, because I was hanging out with his son. I guess he thought I was some kind of little gangster guy or something. So he was like, but when she said, she asked for the part. Oh yeah, give it to her. She could have parents, teachers, and stuff like that. The apartment was atrocious.
Oh, Lord.
We went in, redid the floors, carpeted, redid cabinets, redid the bathroom. Oh, for this is a rental now.
I was about to ask. Yeah. You own it or not? Yeah, it sounds like you own it.
No. This was rental, and he came up and he brought 2 gallons of paint and said, okay, you know, have at it. And we did a job on that apartment. Painted, I had my nephew there. We painted the inside. Matter of fact, painted all the inside the cabinets.
But now this is very small, Julie.
Very small, that's right.
It's a 2-bedroom, but it's...
it was 2 bedroom. I mean, they carpeted
it. It's like a duplex.
Yeah, and then did the floors, linoleum in the floors, and all this kind of stuff. And really kind of transformed that little part.
Yeah, so.
But I was an art major, so it wasn't that hard doing that. Paint it up and put some stickers up on the inside the cabinet.
But just another example of the discrimination that we experienced even back then. And we're talking about, we got married in 68. So this was during that 68, 69 transition year. One of the other things that had happened for me, I had, while he was away in Tallahassee going to school, I was actually living down in Dade County with my grandparents. And came back here, and then of course had to start getting a new doctor, dentist, and all that good stuff. But anyway, had called and made an appointment with a dentist off of McGregor Boulevard. And I guess, I don't know how long you've been around here, but that's the Ritzy, used to be the Ritzy. Anyway, here again. And even in 68, we still had some businesses who had separate entrances for whites and blacks. Okay?
Yeah.
And I went in to that business off the McGregor Boulevard entrance. And time I walked in there, and you know, when you go to a doctor's office, you always have to sit in the waiting room a little while and all this good stuff before you can actually go back. When I walked in there, it was, oh yeah, come right on in, you know, and the nurse, receptionist, whatever, I don't remember who it was, she ushered me right on out of that waiting area and set me in a hallway. So I would be out of sight and out of mind. And I don't know how long I sat there, but I decided in my mind, I'm not going to do this, and I ended up going right on back out the back door.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But anyway, Cape Coral High School.
Cape Coral.
Yeah.
Actually, if I could ask, I remember, and this is a random thing I remember reading, I saw an article in the news press where I think it was after, it wasn't like this was like right in the middle of things, like between 68 and 1970,
uh-huh.
that they it was when they were forcing integration, but like the city had passed an ordinance,
uh-huh.
where it wasn't owners were allowed to like refuse people based on race. It was like owner, like they were allowed to put up signs that said, mm-hmm. like the owner could refuse service to, uh-huh. anyone based on like any reason whatsoever.
I don't recall that.
It was I'd have to look at it again, but yeah. it was a weird thing that I had read in the news press.
I don't recall it. What I do recall, I mean, going back to when I was a kid, I know that, you know, downtown they had these kind of white only or
right.
colored only type situations, but I can
the different water fountain.
Yeah, water fountain. Or even, you know, way there. Trailway bus station.
Right.
At one side. But I don't remember, because I don't know, like I said, at that particular time, we stayed with my parents.
Yeah.
And two-bedroom house. We stayed in one bedroom. Eventually moved across the street in an apartment.
How long did you stay at that apartment?
About a year.
Okay.
Because my dad always said, you got to have your own.
Mm.
And the one thing that, you know, now it was finding, you know, somewhere to build. Her parents owned a lot. It's where we are now. It was in the family.
Yeah, it was my grandfather's lot.
Yeah, okay, on the grandfather's side. But anyway, that was given to us. But it was only 50-foot front. So we couldn't build a house that we wanted to build, so we basically had to go to another professor, teacher, whatever, and ask to buy a part of the next lot. See, because so the people who moved next door to us, we had a lot and a half, they have a lot and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it's Betty who has it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Betty has a lot and a half next door to us.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, to make a long story short, even after acquiring this property, we were going around to people she knew, people that I knew, and we were designing this house. First, we tried to design a house that would sit on the 50-foot lot, and that just wasn't going to happen unless you build something like that right there. The zoning was different in that area also.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, one of the best zonings that was in the black neighborhood. The zone, I think, at 18, I think they got rid of all those things now. But to make a long story short, we ended up moving there. We had to go to First Federal to get a loan, and we were rejected outright, and the man was named Charlie Kynes. See, you don't remember that.
Yeah, Mr.
Charlie Kynes told us point blank.
He wasn't so kind.
Yeah,
I was about to say.
He told us point blank. I mean, although we were working, we were employed, we were teachers. I was a teacher, but we were in the school system. But I could do pretty much whatever I wanted. I mean, we had resources to do what we needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Charlie Kynes told us, we're not going to give you that money to build that type of house in that neighborhood. Pretty nice neighborhood now. This is not a, you know, shabby.
Rank-a-dank.
Yeah. Matter of fact, it was across the street from where her parents lived.
Mm.
So it was like, we're in that, you know, we can't get that kind of.
Right. It wasn't a good investment for them. Not,
and guess how much it was? $28,000.
Oh, wow.
That's all it was, $28,000. But eventually.
You're talking about mid-70s.
Yeah. Eventually we got $30,000. But. Mm. To make a long story short, and I've always been a newspaper addict, just read newspapers after newspapers, and so when it came to politics and things like that, I was pretty heady when it came to that situation. But he made a statement. Now, don't get me wrong. We will not give you the money to build that particular house, even if you were building it in Russell Park. And I'm like, where the heck is Russell Park? But Russell Park is some little rundown neighborhood that was out Palm Beach Boulevard. I didn't know it because it was in a white neighborhood. So what he was trying to say was, I'm not discriminating against you guys. So in other words, if you were white and you were building that in Russell Park, we still wouldn't give you the money.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, like I said, some kind of way you got to read between the lines.
Yeah. Okay.
So this was his way of rejecting us. So, like I said, went back and, like I said, I'm still reading about it. At that particular time, this was the early 70s, and there was a downturn in the housing market. Housing was, I guess, once again, getting ready to go bust.
Mm.
And I was reading out of Atlanta where the federal government had released some money to stimulate the housing market again. And it was called tandem money. So I went back to see Mr. Charlie Kynes and I asked him once again about the loan. He was like, so I asked him, had you ever heard of the tandem money? And all of a sudden, he just started looking kind of strange. Like, where the heck did you get this from, you know? So I think it was that Thursday that we went to see, I don't know, we went back or whatever. Anyway, it was 3 days later that they were calling us to go to Cape Coral. They were closing on it, so we had got it. Now, whether it was the tandem money or what it was, we're not exactly sure.
Mm.
But I was aware that there was this government money, and it was out there going back into the housing market. So we got that, you know. Well, I said we got it. We got the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the loan was $30,000.
Okay.
The house that we built was basically on the. There was a guy who was once, I don't know if you're familiar with Michigan Homes. Michigan Homes were, they're supposed to be in a high caliber type, one of the best at that particular time houses. But this
they
guy.
They were building homes on the Breakable.
Right.
Oh, okay.
They were building homes in the, what's the name of the place down there? It's right off of
Whiskey Creek.
Town and Country.
Town and Country. Yeah.
Town and Country. Okay, they were building these out there. And this guy, his name was Mata, who was an executive in Michigan Homes. For some reason, he had a falling out with them.
Mm.
So he decided, I'll build my own home. I'll build my own. So he had these models across the street from Michigan Home. I guess this is where you get your free advertising or whatever. Just what happened. We had been looking at how and whatever. We went back to, you know, riding down McGregor Boulevard, and we saw it. Model home, I would go visit model home. So went in to see him, and he, you know, to telling us, yeah, he built a house just like Michigan Homes, but there were certain things that we couldn't afford, you know, like the tile roofs. You know, you get the asbestos, you know, shingles instead of the tile roof that cuts off. We don't get no driveway. We don't get the swimming pool in the back, you know. We don't get the patio. We don't get none of that. But the house is built on the same style as in Michigan. We do the same quality. You just have to put in your own driveway. You got to put in your own patio. You got your own swimming pool. You, all this kind of stuff. So when we got our house, our bathroom door opened into the backyard.
Oh, okay.
Because it was supposed to open onto a pool deck. So. But long story short, we eventually got a swimming pool.
Yeah, okay.
And we got a driveway and all that good stuff. Now I stop talking.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'm going to have to shut him up, but we'll be out there already again and have him finish. When he was talking about Mr. Kynes, though, one of the things he forgot to include was the fact that even though we were, he said that we would get the loan, he threatened us by saying if we missed one
payment. If they foreclose on our house and we miss one payment. I'm serious. That stands out in my mind. Yeah, I mean, this guy, he was upset by the fact that I had done this research.
Yeah.
And he just really didn't want to, you know, give up the floor. He said, yeah, I want you to understand.
Yeah.
If you miss one payment, that we were going to foreclose again. Well, we were young and kind of crazy, too. We didn't make us no different, you know. We might miss a lot of payments. We didn't care. But, you know, we've never missed a payment. Matter of fact, we used to double up payment. We didn't, you know, didn't make us no different.
Yeah.
Now I guess I would be concerned. I'm a little older and a little wiser. You know, I'd slow down. But at that time, I don't care about what you say. Mm-hmm. Give us some money. Let's get out of here.
Now, were you guys only looking for property, like, in Fort Myers, or was, like, I mean, because you were working in North Fort Myers, so it was, like, North Fort Myers, or even, like, a table on the table?
Yeah, I was working in North Fort Myers, but it was not, we basically, like I said, we were given this lot.
Oh, that's right.
We were given this lot, so it was not like, you know, we had to go out and find a lot, because what we were doing was we were leveraging and using that for collateral.
Yeah.
The lot to borrow it for. That's why he really didn't want, you know, this lot ain't worth nothing. So, I mean, so to give you that kind of money on that lot, nah. So that's what we were trying to do.
Okay.
But as far as looking someplace else, he was working in North Fort Myers. I was working in Cape Coral. Mm. I really wanted to move to Cape Coral.
Yeah.
But Cape Coral had too many rules and regulations and not enough trees.
Crazy ordinance about you couldn't park your truck in the driveway, and they were going to cite you for 12 inches of grass. Or, I mean, a lot of crazy stuff that was going on there. And you know, I was like, no, this ain't about what I'm about. We're not, you know, at that time. And I still have my dad's boat or something like that.
I don't know.
You know, I don't even remember, but there was something that I just figured that there were a little too many rules and regulations and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we were already struggling to try to exist, and I don't need added pressure.
Yeah. See, I was asking about the Cape because I had heard about the Cape. Someone had done an interview with Eileen Bernard was her name, and she worked for Gulf American, which was the company that sold property there. And she told the guy that interviewed him, he's actually with the same organization I'm with, but he was doing it in like the 80s.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she told him that whenever anyone from, or if anyone from the Dunbar community, so any black people, tried to buy land in Cape Coral, all the people that were selling land in Cape Coral, they said they'd take them to the mud lots. Or the mud lots and things like that. Like, they take them to the bad land. I was going to ask about that. I didn't know if you guys had looked for Cape Coral experiences or anything like that.
We just really never even inquired about living in Cape Coral. Because, like I said, with all the, at that time, people just really come to, I think they kind of loosened a lot of the ordinances somewhat. They adjusted them so that, because there was a time you couldn't build a wooden frame house in Cape Coral and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was, you know, Gulf American was, it was not Gulf American, it was the people living in Cape Coral.
There was
a lot of retirees who just were saying, okay, this is, we're going to keep it, you know, we're going to keep Cape Coral at Cape Coral. Everybody, basically, they had started building down near the yacht club and building back.
So
the only thing that, I mean, there was no bridge. You had to go across the bridge and then go to Pondella to go all the way down to
South End.
Because I had a friend who worked at the yacht club.
Mm.
And we said to go down that night to pick him up, Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, to drive all the way out Pine Island Road, getting to get on Del Prado, ride all the way down there, man, look like it would take you forever. You know? Matter of fact, at that time, along Del Prado, they had a landing strip.
For planes?
They were airplanes.
Oh, wow, I didn't know.
bring
but
people.
These are the small Cessna type things.
Right, they were not small planes. Yeah,
yeah, not like Pagefield.
Yeah,
not like that. But they would fly these people in,
right,
to, you know, see these, and you used to ride by there and see the light planes and stuff. And right off, right beside their Prado.
See, I was asking about that too, because I was going to ask, how long was the drive to Cape Coral then? Because they didn't have...
Forever.
Yeah.
And see, Cape Coral was not near Fort Myers at that time.
Yeah.
It was just way out there, at almost at the beginning of the river.
Mm.
Yeah. Cape Coral, yeah. Cape Coral actually is southwest of Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at that time. Because you go across the old...
Yeah, but it was 30 minutes. It wasn't that bad.
30 minutes by when?
Huh?
After they built the new bridge? Remember, there was no bridge at Cape Coral. The first Cape Coral bridge was way down the far end. Okay. Remember, there was no Cape Coral bridge.
No. And I never went to work that way. I always went north for Myers.
Yeah, that was before, I'm telling you... You went to work that way because you were going to Colusa.
Yeah.
Because that was Colusa is on the north end. But what I'm talking about, when we grew up, we used to go fishing out there.
Uh-huh.
So I knew there wasn't no bridge crossed there. The first bridge they built was the Cape Cod Bridge, the one on the far end.
Uh-huh.
Then they came and built the midpoint, one that they fought, and
right.
I thought they were going to have an uprising about that.
Really?
Yeah, because that bridge was going right into the middle of McGregor Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then they had to take out the quote-unquote the sacred
palm trees.
Serious, boy. Hey, you, my goodness. But you getting ready. It was really bad. I mean, there's some heart hurt feelings over that.
Oh, wow.
Fort Myers, Sioux, Cape Coral, and what is this? Dr. Grace, he led the coalition from Fort Myers against the Cape Coral. I mean, it was like an insurrection there.
Oh, wow.
The midpoint, it was bad. The midpoint bridge.
I was going to say, midpoint brings in a lot of business for Fort Myers. I mean, it basically connects the two.
They would talk, well, man, if you know that the Cape Coral Bridge... Midpoint Bridge does not empty onto McGregor Boulevard.
Mm.
That was one of their things.
Concessions.
It will never empty onto McGregor Boulevard. It goes over McGregor Boulevard. You do a hook or whatever to get back, but it does not go into McGregor Boulevard.
Oh my God, I never knew. See, the funny thing too is my mother owned, she owned a shop off like McGregor right when you got off the bridge, and I always wondered why it was designed like that. And
the big fight,
there's the answer.
Yeah, there's the big fight. you would never matter of fact, they even had to close a church or move a church or something like that down there. It was a big fight now. And what made the whole thing so bad, the city of Fort Myers didn't want, but it was not in the city limits. City limits that stopped before it got there.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who were living in Fort Myers on McGregor Boulevard, it was not their fight, but they wanted to fight anyway.
Mm.
They lost that argument because this is not even in your city.
Yeah.
So, hey.
Jeez.
It was a fight now, believe me. That was a fight.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Back to the good stuff.
See, we keep going back to Cape Coral High School, but then we go into something else.
Because one thing leads to another.
Okay.
It's for riddles.
It was, NAACP, we're talking about the fact that I started working under Veronica. And then after her term, I think, did Willie Green come next?
Willie Bell,
right. I was just going to say, because...
I'm not exactly sure. Could have been what's her face?
Not Carlita.
Carlita came before, when didn't she come before Willie Green?
The Willies, they serve two different terms.
Really. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Carlita came after the first term. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because Carlita came after Chicken Gate.
Yeah, Chicken Gate.
Do I want to know?
Well, around the time of Watergate, we are local NAACP, and see, and you're so young, you won't even remember. Down, you know where Harborside is?
Yes.
Okay. Prior to Harborside, there was a city facility known as
Exhibition Hall.
Exhibition Hall. That was right on the water.
Okay.
Okay, and that was their big to-do place for events around here. But anyway, NAACP had a, we have an annual banquet, a fundraiser. And that year, they, and I can't tell you what the year was, but they had a, their banquet at the exhibition hall and ran out of food.
Oh.
Yeah. And it became known as Chicken Gate.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah, so I said, who are these people? Yeah.
But anyway, during that time, I became disillusioned with the administration at the time, so I left the NAACP. I stopped working with them for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, you with your afro?
Yes.
Yeah. This is funny.
Yeah, you jealous. I just have more hair than you.
Well, my hair had a little, my hair was tightly curled.
I want to ask that. Oh, wait, disillusion, you said. Disillusion, like how?
Because of the way the administration mishandled money.
Okay.
Okay. And it left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths because of, oh, geez. Oh, yo, you just saying you're one of them?
Yeah.
Is that what, oh, okay. Yeah. So, and at that time, I don't know. I didn't have the idea of staying and fighting, you know, in order to correct things. It was just wash my hands of it.
Okay. And this was under, you said, Will, is this the same Willie Green that ran against Teresa Watkins Brown?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So when you say he mishandled money, that, or well, not he in particular, but like the administration.
Right.
How were they mishandling money then? That, well, left the sour taste. Like, do you remember, well, like, what the argument was over?
Well, just the fact that it was, quote, disappearing.
Oh, okay.
They,
there's one thing, and that'll cut you off. I keep cutting you off.
Yeah, yes, you're good at that.
The fact is that when someone, a lay person, came in to had a problem with the NAACP, like, the first question they would ask the person is, are you a member of NAACP? And if the person would say no, then they would collect that person's money. A lot of time that problem, whatever the problem, was never solved, but you had that person's money. So that was one of the, you know, I was never too keen on that kind of recruiting tactic.
Yeah.
Maybe you can call it a recruiting tactic, but to be nice,
yeah.
I never really cared for that kind of craziness.
And so, I can't prove it. It was hearsay. But in some of those instances where people gave money directly to them, to become members of the NAACP, I was told that the money never made it to the national office.
So, yeah. It's implied they just pocketed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What kind of effect did that have on, like, the community then? Because then if people are, like, losing well, I guess you could say losing trust in the NAACP, yeah. Then, like, well, what happened?
For a while there, a lot of people just refused to join.
Okay.
They figured the group wasn't effective, so why bother?
Hmm.
You know, so it took, and right now, the president of our local chapter, a branch, sorry, yeah. They don't call them chapters, is a convicted felon.
James Mawakil?
James Mawakil served time for killing a man.
Oh, okay.
Okay. you never know, you learn all of this stuff, huh?
Yeah.
It's a convicted felon.
Yeah. I don't know, I can't tell you how long he served, but he did, you know, serve some time in prison. And when he came in, a lot of people did not want to become members or refused to join because they didn't want to follow, you know, a convicted felon.
Mm.
All I can say to that stance is the fact that because he was a convicted felon, Brother James has been able to do more for people who are now in his situation, or needs help going through the legal system and, you know, getting advice on what you should do, what you shouldn't do, and pointing them in the right direction. Then, hey, I know I couldn't do it because I don't know that stuff. from that standpoint, he has done a world of good for a lot of people. One of the reasons I got involved with him was in order to undo the reputation that had been done. And we talked about Willie Green. There's also Willie Battle. The two of them were like peas in a pod, because at one point one was president, the other one was vice president, and then they flip-flop.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Regardless, under both of those administrations, we had this thing about money disappearing, you know, and malfeasance in office or whatever, because the National even removed them. So.
Oh, like they removed them from their post?
From their office.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Organization.
But then, you know, it took, you know, Brother James coming in and me as treasurer and some of those other folk who wanted to see the NAACP succeed and turn around its image. You know, is the reason we have stuck by him.
Mm.
You know, through these last 8 years, 10 years, whatever it is.
Is that how long James Mawakil's been on there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Has that been like a point of contention then with like his criminal history?
For some folk.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, where are we going to? 3 election cycles, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now. And each time, let me see, when he went into office, I don't remember if anybody had run against him then or not, because when, but I know the last 2 times there was somebody that would run against him. One even had his doctorate, but he still had not been around enough.
Mm.
And was knowledgeable enough to help people out, like Brother James had.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
What kind of work does the NAACP do today? Because I know LaVon was talking about fighting, like, the gerrymandering, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. What is, like, the role of the NAACP in Fort Myers today?
Okay, well, I alluded earlier to the fact that they did take the school district to court in order to get the single-member district thing on. Right now, we are still fighting with the school board. Get my terms straight. There's a proposal on the table now that we're waiting on a response from the school board on. Because I'm not a part of the education committee, so I can't even remember. I have to call somebody to find out what that is. But I know they're still trying to get some things done through the school system. And we're constantly going to bat for people, and mainly minorities who have been unduly terminated or unfairly treated, that sort of thing. We ended up having to negotiate with, which county was it? Not only do we handle things for Lee County, we have some surrounding areas. What is it? I think it was Wauchula. That's Highland County, right? Wauchula is Highlands County?
No. I think we know.
Okay, well, anyway. We've had to send representatives to help some other folk around the area as far as injustices, especially police brutality, you know, kind of things, or harassment. So it just all depends. Around here lately, we've been known more for James's fight against the statue, the Robert E. Lee bus, not statue, that's downtown. So whether that's a legitimate concern, you know, it's a matter of opinion. I've told them before, I had go along with the majority, you know, however, when they vote. But my thing is, I'd rather be fighting that portrait in the commission chamber than that bus.
Yeah.
That bus, you know, until they pointed it out, a lot of people didn't even realize that bus was there.
Yeah.
You know, because I myself passed by it all the time and never really thought a whole lot about it. But if I have to go in commission chambers and sit there looking up at Robert E. Lee in his Confederate uniform.
You know, I sit under it.
Yeah.
Now that sounds kind of crazy, but they were doing construction on the
at City Hall,
City Chambers, and at that time I was on City Council, and we had to move a meeting to the Commissioner Chambers, and I had to sit under that.
See, when I was growing up, that was because the bus, or the debate about the bus is, I think, relatively new, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was in high school and reading the paper, it was the portrait. Yep.
Yeah.
Which was before. Whatever. Didn't the NAACP file a case against that, or no?
Not a legal
or a complaint.
Case. Right. Yeah. We filed a complaint, but it never took it to court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's one of the things I would love to see us do, is to go back, but after. Well, as I say, Charlottesville, but not the last incident in Charlottesville, but they prior to that one, they had had the thing where Nikki Haley, who's now whatever she is, foreign
ambassador,
ambassador somewhere.
UN ambassador.
Yeah. they took their, you know, Confederate statue down and all.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the things that got James all fired up about, you know, trying to get something done here in Lee County.
So. Okay. Well, I guess, wait, what the hell? Hold on, I gotta check the time. I remember last time we were talking, and I was like, oh, we got a ton of time left, and then it was like 4 o'clock, and they were closing the front. I was like, oh, we got 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to ask then, so we'll go until this thing says an hour 30, because
okay.
Then that gives us, then Betty's
right.
Not going crazy up there. I wanted to ask.
We'll take her out to dinner.
Yeah, she's going out to dinner. She's going to have. She's going to wine thing with Harriet.
Yeah. I want to ask Levon. I want to ask what got you into the city council? Because I know before that you were teaching, and then you were also coach with Pop Warner.
I was always kind of interested in politics, but I worked with Mrs. Shoemaker on her campaign. I think what, 1, 2, 3 times or whatever. So it just kind of like I had that interest, and the lady who was in office before me, she was kind of like incognito. She's been there for 21 years. I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
Been there like 21 years and couldn't. She just really didn't respond to us. But there was this one day I just was going out to the swimming pool, and the swimming pool was not open. I was like, well, why isn't this pool open? And it might have been summer, and I probably was grouchy, I don't know. But I tried to call, and I couldn't get an answer. And so that probably put me into that. Actually, I was trying to find someone else to run for office because she and I now retired. We're supposed to be getting ready to travel. But I think I can't remember who told me, why don't you run? You know, so that just pretty much pushed me over the edge to do that.
Remember part of the thing was we. The neighborhood that we live in, we're in one block, yeah, and the council person was in the next block, but on a different street from us.
Mm-hmm.
But on our block, she owned a house that was right on the corner from where we live. She took that house and made it into a duplex, which was not what our particular neighborhood was zoned for at the time. And we had been out of town and come back in looking at TV. They had a council meeting on. And I don't know what it was she said, but he looked at it and then decided to run down to City Hall, so that he could confront her.
Yeah, but at that particular time, it was like they were they either gave her permission to do that or something like that. But I went down to speak against having putting a single family neighborhood. Now you're gonna put a multi family. Structure there.
Yeah.
And her thing was, well, no, this is not a multiple. Well, all I'm doing is expanding the, closing the carport, is what she said. But the first thing they did was put 2 mailboxes out there. So then when I could file a complaint, then she went and took one of the mailboxes down. And then the guy who lived directly across the street, Sylvester Harris, he was really upset too, but, you know, he's a construction guy. And he's worried about getting contracts with the city and all. So he just, I can't get hooray, hooray. So that's what really kind of pushed me over the edge. I was just kind of floating out there, but the fact that she was, you know, kind of chest stuck out, you know, this, I've been in office all these years, and you know, I do what I want to pretty much.
Yeah.
So now it was time for her to go. So that's what kicked me out there. And it was a pretty nasty race.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, real nasty. People going around putting up signs and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Lots of mudslinging?
Yeah, well, no, not on our part, but, well, yeah, I mean, the fact that I had never been to college, and some old crazy, they sending out all kind of
false information.
Yeah, warped up stuff, you know. And but it didn't. I've always been kind of like, well, if I win, yeah, it's okay. But I'm all right.
And one of the funny things about parts about that, you talk about them pulling up the sand. People came back and told us, gave us a description of the vehicle that the person who was going around pulling up the signs was. Turned out to be Brother James.
Oh, wow.
This was before he got involved with the NAACP. But she was paying him
to pull up the signs of your guys' campaign.
It was kind of funny because Nan's not lying in bed. I get a phone call from court enforcement. It seemed that my signs that I put out were illegal. Some were too close to the end of the street. Some was too close to a stop sign. I mean, it was kind of, you know, one was too close to a fire hydrant. And the court enforcement run around and pulled my signs up.
Oh, wow.
And they told me, well, you can come down and get the signs. We'll just charge you $5 per sign. And I told them, y'all keep the signs. So it was kind of funny. Now, Edison, at first, you know, he had these signs, and all of a sudden, all these signs turned green, which was her colors. All the signs were green all of a sudden.
Yeah.
People just called my house, man, what happened to your sign? Well, your sign disappeared. Her sign's coming up. And the whole thing was more funny to me than anything. I was like, hey, okay, whatever.
Were you surprised when you won, though?
No, because you get that feeling how things, you know, people working, people, you know, you getting that momentum and things like that. And, you know, things were, because she was really upset. I mean, she went into the hospital after that.
Oh, wow.
She never expected to, what she said, I won four elections and I will be five when we were having these debates, right? You know, we had a little debates, and she would, you know, I'm kidding her with kindness. You know, she come in, I pull the seats out of her, all kinds of crazy. But it just aggravated her. You know, I just kind of, you know, I guess I was supposed to just get crazy and just drop off the end of the earth or something. I don't know, but it just didn't. I never really got too excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
But she, man, for a long time, she came back, she wearing these dark shades, and she was, I felt kind of bad then.
All right, well, how long were you on the council for?
I was on the council for 8 years, and I came back and I served another year, so it was 9.
Okay.
I served took somebody else's place who resigned. That's a whole nother story, too. But out of the 9 years.
Okay.
And I feel we did some pretty good things in the fact that on MLK there, if you note that you're scarcely populated when it comes to businesses.
Mm.
And my whole thing with my promise was to bring businesses back to MLK.
Yeah.
And the way to do that was basically widen the zoning for MLK. It's zone commercial, but when the state came by, you know, it's a state road, but the state came along to widen it, they widened it from 2 lanes to 4 lanes with a 5th lane in the middle for a median.
Yeah.
So those businesses that left could not come back because at that particular time the size of your building dictate how many parking spaces you got to have. Mm. So there was no parking. So in essence, no one qualified. No businesses really qualified to go back on that street.
Okay.
So my thing was, let's go and zone the thing, widen it out, zone it all the way to the next street that runs parallel on each side of it. Mm. So now you can put parking in the back.
Yeah.
So we basically got that done.
Okay.
But then I lost election, so it just kind of like the next person. No, reapportionment. It's because streets ended up with the.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the rezoning overlay is what it was called.
Mm.
And ultimately, the next person who's in, he just, that was not his priority, so. We're still where we are right now.
Yeah, it just kind of stood
but
there.
But I did a lot of traveling to kind of figure out what to do with that street to basically get it, you know, get it up and running again. Because that at one time was a business district for the black community.
Yeah.
So it, like I said, when the state came along and did their thing, state thing is they're locally. Locals are not a priority. Priority is to move cars.
Mm.
And that's what they were doing. So, you know, you had to come in and, matter of fact, I think I got some slack from the state. I went and jumped on the MPO. Went and jumped on the MPO to fight them too. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a crazy person. I just kind of, you see where pressure is coming and that's where you attack that particular point.
Yeah.
MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization is, they're real powerful.
Mm.
So I went and got myself put on that, you know. So, and a lot of the things that, you know, I got done, there isn't any, okay, I can see it, whatever, because you can't see businesses back on MLK because it just didn't happen that way.
Mm.
But I was proud of the fact that we did get some stuff done out there.
See, that's one of the things I always wondered, like, when reading about everything, because you're right with, like, that being, like, that used to be, like, the business district. I hear from people that, like, I mean, you could get anything you needed.
Right. Yeah.
And, I mean, now whenever I go down MLK and everything, it's just, there's nothing.
It was state decided to full-lane it, and they did. They were given businesses moving expenses, but you know, if somebody come and give you some money, you don't lose. A lot of those businesses don't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people wanted to come back, they could not come back simply because
the parking situation
was eliminated pretty much.
Hmm.
So that's why I went in the fight.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think I pretty much won that one, except for the fact that there's no follow-up person who ended up with it. His whole thing was that McCullen Hall thing.
Is that why there's such a big focus on McCullen Hall right now?
McCullen Hall was supposed to be the catalyst to start businesses back into that corridor.
Yeah.
Especially the next two blocks from McCullen Hall, right? And then Flashpoint, McCullen Hall, IMAX, that was supposed to be the draw. IMAG, whatever they want to call themselves, I don't care. But anyway, this was supposed to be the catalyst to start the building back in. And then I think there's a whole lot of competition with building back downtown too.
Yeah.
Because if you go back and you look at Community Redevelopment Agency, you got these TIF districts. Downtown is a TIF district. The TIF districts that basically says that all the taxes in that stays in that district.
Mm-hmm.
So you use that to redevelop the area.
Okay. And that's local taxes.
That's local taxes.
Yeah.
But if you thought and think about businesses that have money and the taxes are staying in, and quite naturally, you have a lot of money situated in the downtown area because that's where all the businesses are.
Yeah.
But if you start in something like MLK, MLK Veronica Shoemaker, because that was in the same TIF district, you don't have resources there. to build up your little thing to bring development back.
Yeah.
So my whole thing was, if they're gonna keep that money downtown, and it's supposed, that's my first proposal was, make all the Fort Myers one big taxing district.
Yeah.
And then looking at me like, you got your mind. Well, you know, that, but that was something to shake them up.
Yeah.
And the next thing was, okay, what we're gonna do is we're gonna make that Dunbar area big taxing district, you know, Veronica Shoemaker. So all you get is nice trees, nice rubber along MLK. That's all part of that taxing money.
Mm.
And you get this park. Okay, beautiful park here.
Yeah.
All that came out of the taxing, because it's in the taxing district.
Mm.
But when it came to putting money into businesses or using some money as startup, I think they were giving away like 10,000. Some businesses along, they got new facades, new fronts in the building, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was pretty much, because their money was not there, but there's just so much money.
Mm.
So, but that's, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I gotta stop talking.
I would just make a note to the person who's transcribing this. All this paper you hear flipping is because LaVon Sims is turning pages. And I'm gonna tell you, you need
to. No, turning pages because it keeps me stimulated.
But I wonder how much interference that is. But
it's
anyway.
Not a whole lot, can
yeah,
be.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I don't know. And you know, I might be the one transcribing this.
So he'll understand what's going on.
I'll understand, yeah. And I also won't have to, well, here, I'll stop it here.